My name is Tess Newton-Kane from the Development Policy Centre, and this morning it's great to be able to spend some time with Frances Herman. And based on Frances's long experience of the media in the Pacific, that's pretty much what we're going to talk about. So Frances, thank you for making some time available this morning.
Thank you very much, Tess.
Okay, so let's start with, maybe you could give us your assessment of the current state of play in relation to the media in the Pacific generally, and in particular it would be really good to get a sense of what you think the relative strengths and weaknesses are of the media landscape as a whole.
Thank you, Tess. I think one of the biggest strengths that the media of the media in the Pacific is the diversity. The diversity of the cultures, the diversity of the political, economic and social environment that they work in. And it's all different, irrespective whether they from Malaysia, Melanesia, Polynesia or Micronesia. Over the last, at least the last 3 decades I've been in the industry, there's been a lot of training, capacity development, assistance thrown our way into the region. I think in hindsight, sometimes we question the sustainability of that intervention. But I think the biggest, apart from the diversity of the cultures and that, the biggest strength is that our language, the Pacific's very oral. It's oral history. And this is where I think all the recent market surveys have shown us that radio still remains the major medium for communications in the region. With the explosion of the mobile phone in the Pacific, more than 80% penetration, but that doesn't necessarily translate into usage. So while remote areas can or have access to mobile phones, they may not have the credit or the funds to buy credit to make calls. with all of that, it poses and the way the islands are spread throughout this massive Pacific Ocean leads to a major difficulty, and that is geographical location. How do you get a newspaper out to rural areas? How do we ensure that the radio signal and television signal reaches every single household in the country? Those are horrendous difficulties. And we know, having worked in the region, particularly in the development assistance area over the last decade, we've seen in Vanuatu, for example, for 11 years, they did not have a national radio service. The radio service was confined to the capital, Port Vila, and Luganville on Santo. The same thing in the Solomon Islands. The same thing in Papua New Guinea. So through donor assistance, through development partners, I mean, signal, if you so to speak, has been expanded. Fiji Television, based in Fiji and in Papua New Guinea, and soon to open in Solomon Islands, the installation and the commissioning of the Sky satellite platform just opened up lots of things. It meant that up in the sky we were able to upload content, relevant, compelling, Pacific-grown content, and people in the Pacific could download it. But not enough people have taken advantage of that because of the costs. Mm. We've just completed the baseline study throughout the 14 countries of the Pacific Forum, Pacific Island Forum countries, and it's produced some very interesting data. That report will be available officially, publicly, at the end of June 2013. But it's showing us something. It's showing us that one is there's a serious lack of consistent, regular journalism training in the region. With the exception of Fiji, the technical vocational education training centers, which offer journalism training or media training, are extremely under-resourced and weak. There's a high number of women who enroll for journalism training. At the end of it, 99% of them drop out. It's to do with the costs, the high cost of education. Schools don't have a media or communications curriculum. As a result, people grow up being very suspicious of the media. And it creates, it reinforces the stereotypes people have about the media generally. And that's not to say that the media has been all saintly and hunky-dory. It's far from that. But I think in many quarters, the media is genuinely committed to keeping people fully informed. They are genuinely wanting to continue to develop a very interactive media where people's views can be heard. There's an exchange of views. There's a genuine desire by the media to get people to contribute to national development by way of being having an informed public opinion. But there are other issues that prevent that from happening. One of them is the economics of it, the costs. It is very expensive. But that doesn't mean that's if you want to go for the Rolls Royce. Nothing wrong with a Toyota or Mazda. And you could buy a radio station and set up one for under 5,000 US dollars. So, you know, it can be done very cost effectively, but the preference is to go with the Rolls Royce. Mm-hmm. I think linked to that is the political climate. and I think for me, that's a major concern. The politics of the Pacific has thwarted the freedom of the media in the region. That is my professional opinion.
Okay, I might just, because you know, I wanted to ask you about media freedom, so maybe we can have a talk about that now. So, I mean, what do you... We hear a lot about media freedom, and certainly I read and hear a lot of conflicting opinions. So what do you think is the real state of media freedom in the Pacific, and how much do you think it varies between countries or between the sub-regions?
Based on our research, every country in the region that we work in, and that's 14 countries, all have media legislation of some sort. They all have built into their constitutions of the countries freedom of expression, freedom of movement. In reality, in our view, that doesn't happen. And I'm not talking specifically about Fiji here. We're talking about all the other countries where there are restrictions on the total freedom of the media. I'm a firm believer that in a self-regulated free media, but a responsible media at the same time, which contributes to the national development and the national ethos of a country. And the media, our role is not to go out there to get anyone. That should never be our role. We are often considered the self-appointed fourth estate. And I can live with that label. I think the media in the region fulfills an extremely crucial role in keeping not just governments, but the public sector, private sector, the religious and the NGOs and all of that. The media should be about keeping them honest, keeping them focused on the work that they are supposed to do for the people. The end result is people should benefit from it. And the media is no exception. I mean, the media should not be excluded from their scrutiny. The issue of media freedom is very different in different countries. If I can take Fiji, for example, Fiji is the military government, the regime has effectively neutralized the media in Fiji. So the media in Fiji is not free, in my view. It is not as free to report whatever it wants to report about what's happening internally and externally. it has become apparent that the media has actually taken some sides in the whole political climate in Fiji. It's become extremely difficult for them to operate like they used to operate, without fear or favor. And now they are accountable to a series of very draconian decrees, which makes it hard for them to function freely. My fear is that the effectiveness of the way the military has controlled and neutralized the media in Fiji is and could be having a flow-on effect to the other countries. So the other political leaders are saying, ah, that's great, you know, we can stop these people from criticizing us. We can make it illegal for them to criticize us. And I suspect that's what's happening. It is influencing, in some way or other, other countries or other Pacific islands from doing the very same thing, but in a slightly different way.
So what would you point to as evidence for that concern that you have? Oh, what sort of things have you seen happening that would make you think that?
Lots of it. You look at Samoa, Tonga, Solomon Islands, Papua New Guinea, Vanuatu, Cook Islands, where they have are proposing amendments to certain legislation. They are proposing government-regulated media authorities, like they do in Fiji, where they are pretty critical of the media. They blame the media for causing instability or being extremely critical of governments and that. There's a lot of evidence around of it. Not as blatant as it is in Fiji.
Right, okay. So I guess that leads me to my next question, which I think is a related issue. What do you see is or should be the role of national and or regional media associations? What are the challenges they face? What are bearing in mind the sorts of things that you've just outlined to me, what are the sorts of roles and responsibilities these peak bodies should be taking on in the future?
I'm a firm believer in strengthening national institutions. If we have very strong, robust national institutions, then only can we strengthen things at a regional level. Unfortunately, in terms of the media, there's been a lot of efforts channeled towards strengthening the regional level and not enough being done at a national level. And the end result is that you have an extremely defunct regional and national bodies. And everyone loses out. No one benefits. And that's why we've decided to work in this space. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a little while. But a key reason for why I say what I say is most of the countries, if not all the Pacific Island countries, treasure their sovereignty. And they don't take it lightly when a regional body tries to prescribe a solution or a directive to the national, at the national level. So in most cases, they disregard that advice or disregard that opinion. Whereas if we had very strong national media associations, they'd be able to implement training, they'd be able to monitor, they'd be able to lobby government, they'd be able to interact with civil society and the churches and that. They'll be able to represent that particular country at a regional and an international level. The current way things are set up is that you have ad hoc people just out of the blues representing certain countries, sitting on regional bodies in the media, and being, with all due respect, very ineffective. There's a lot of politicking going on amongst the media between Polynesia, Melanesia, and Micronesia. It's nothing new in Pacific politics. But the media industry is so small in the region, yet we're so divided. And that's why we've decided to really strengthen national media associations. And one of the reasons is that in the build-up to the design of the current phase of PACMAS, and all the other research work we've been doing and others have been doing, one of the common criticisms that's coming from the Pacific media is what they call foreign or not just the Pacific media, but governments, foreign interference, foreign influence, expatriate tutors, you know, not enough support for Pacific Islanders. And we're saying here's an opportunity to build the capacity of Pacific Islanders so they can be the resource persons, people. There's no need to import from the US or the UK or wherever. But until such time we can build that core of trainers, there may be there is good reason why we continue to depend on people from outside the region to be those resource persons. And I don't subscribe to the view that we should exclude people from outside the region. We should be very inclusive. It should be based on merit, and the best available people to do that job should be brought in. Look at the women in the media, in the Pacific. At the top of my head, I don't have the figures, but I'm sure it'd be anywhere near 80% of media practitioners in the Pacific Islands are women. But if we look at positions of leadership in the media, in the media, they're hardly there. You know, it's us blokes are the ones that are all at the top of organizations and media and editors and all of that. So that's an area that we all need to work in to strengthen, so we can get women into positions of leadership in the media, and not because they're women, but they bring a totally different perspective to things, and there needs to be some sort of a balance. That's one. The second thing in terms of the national associations is that they understand the situation better on the ground. So at a regional level, if I'm sitting in Vanuatu and I'm trying to prescribe a solution or assist Samoa or Tonga, I don't know enough about those countries. I never will be. I'm not from there. I'm not on the ground. You know? I don't feel it. Whereas someone in country who has the heart, he's the heart and soul of the place, can then make a difference. And that's why I think these associations, the national associations, are quite important. I think linked to it is the need for internal in-country complaints procedures. You know, they've just set up the Pacific Ombudsman or moving towards setting it up. But in-country, if they were able to set up a complaints procedure, we could preempt government's moves and said, okay, instead of government setting up a media authority to control the media, let the industry do that with civil society and with government, and set up a complaints procedure or some sort of a mechanism where people can come to and vent their frustrations with the media or raise, and then the media on its part is obliged to correct, to conform to censorship. I think that's why it's quite important for us to strengthen the national media associations, and in turn, they could then strengthen the regional association.
Mm-hmm. And so what in that context that you've just outlined, what would you see as being the role of a regional association, and what's the likelihood of us having one? Because my understanding is that there are two regional organizations. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes, there are two. I reckon there's more than two. there's four or five. All doing different things on a regional level, but all related to the media. And they have all their various vested interests, which is fine. But there is talk, I know, there is talk about everyone coming together under possibly one umbrella. So, you know, this regional media organization, whatever it's called or whoever it is, has a media freedom arm to it, has a industry arm to it, has a owner's arm to it, and it's quite inclusive. So, you know, all of those scenarios, so to speak, can then work together to strengthen the media. Those regional organizations are quite important, don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting that there's no place for them. It is important because sometimes they could, and the regional organizations could represent the region at an international level, could help us lobby at a regional international level, could link up with regional organizations. So it becomes an umbrella body for the region. But it must never replace the importance or the role of the national bodies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so moving to something a little bit different. Outside the region, or sort of those that look at the region from the outside and commentate, there's been a lot of talk about the explosion of social media in the Pacific. So from your perspective, is that just hype, or is social media having an impact on the landscape overall? And if so, how do you think it's having an impact, and how do you see that changing in the future?
Social media is definitely playing a major impact on our lives. Particularly the younger Pacific Islanders, the older ones, the much older ones, you know, my parents or my grandparents, they're not into social media. They never will be. Radio for them remains the staple medium. But those who are in a position to influence change, and those who are in a position or will be in a position in future to lead those changes. I believe are accustomed to social media, and whether they like it or not, are being influenced by social media. And I don't exclude the mobile phone from the social media. I think that's a key piece of hardware that is used in the social media thing. The iPads and the iPods have not taken off in the region like they have in the more developed countries, because it's just a matter of costs. It's very expensive in the region. The smartphones are beginning to make inroad, but they're still very expensive in the region. There are not enough plans, mobile phone plans, to make it affordable for the average person. The issue of electricity in the rural areas, where do you charge your phones? You know, there are solar chargers, but they have their limitations. But putting all that aside, the Facebook and the Twitters and the you know, all of those related things are becoming really, really important, and becoming it's a marketplace. I look at Facebook particularly as a marketplace where all the Pacific Islanders come together, they exchange their views, and they're shopping for ideas, they're shopping for thoughts, they're criticizing each other, you know, they're forming relations. All that is happening in cyberspace. It's quite interesting. I had my two teenage daughters teach me about Facebook and that. And it was a whoa, you know, it was a totally new world. But I think there's the other, and Twitter and the blogs and all of that, so important. People are so, the young people particularly are so active. And those who can afford it actually live in cyberspace. I'm one of those now that's really hooked on to it. I don't contribute too much to it, but I use it as a to measure the mood, the national ethos, the swings, the what's happening. It's quite interesting. And related to that, I think, is the fact that more and more media organizations, traditional media organizations, radio, television, and newspapers, magazines, are turning to the social media as a means of generating content. A cheap, almost a freebie way of generating content. So they're using citizen journalism, as it is often called to, I call it people power, where the people, the average person who is not a journalist or not a producer or not a TV person, can, at the press of a couple of buttons, have his or her opinion on radio, television, and the newspapers. And that's powerful. But I don't think we've embraced it. And a lot of it has to do, I suspect, some of our media leaders, when I say media leaders, the boards of directors and the chief executives, are still living in the past. They live during, and I keep saying this, Noah's time, Noah and his ark. They haven't progressed. I recall my time as the CEO of Fiji Broadcasting. It was just, we were just being introduced to social media. And it was the young people around me that quickly convinced me that, no, we've got to move this way. And I'm thankful we did, because it allowed a lot of people, it actually reduced our operating costs. We didn't need that many people, because we were generating content from within the community, and obviously it has its limitations. We had to cross-check and all that, but it's just such a powerful tool. And what concerns me is that there are still in places within the region some very laid-back traditional media leaders who haven't moved with the times. Yeah? It's getting few and few of them, and you can count them on your fingers. But by and large, I think the media is starting to embrace social media. It is still pretty expensive, internet access, mobile phone charges, slow speeds, but hopefully in time to come, and hopefully not too long away, with the Southern Cross cable and all of that being rolled out, it will become as cheap as buying an ice block at a corner store.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully, because one of the things that, you know, I've been concerned about is, because of all those things that you've mentioned, the use of social media is at the moment is not very inclusive. So basically, you're talking about educated urban people who are and educated employed urban people who possibly are more likely to be male than they are female. Yeah. So it's at the moment it's still a very narrow pool to draw on in terms of that content generation.
Yeah, I mean we looked at look at Vanuatu in Papua New Guinea, where we've done some surveys. Women have access to mobile phones, but they don't have the credit because their husbands don't give them the money for the credit. The man still controls the purse strings, you know, and that's not fair. But one of the things we've tried to do as PACMAS is raise awareness amongst Pacific bureaucrats, the crop agencies, and the politicians about the importance of social media, or not just the importance, but the benefits of social media. Obviously, the disadvantages of it as well. It has its issues. But how could they use social media, like they do in the Western countries, in the first world countries, to gauge the reaction from the constituency? What are people's reaction to a new bridge or a new road and thing? Getting instant feedback from their voters, getting instant feedback from others around them on issues. Eh? And it's a cheap, very effective and fast way of getting some very good feedback.
Okay, that's great. We've touched on the issue of gender in the media a couple of times, and I'd like to maybe explore that a little bit more to finish off. I was very interested to hear you say that 80% of practitioners are women, because my perception is that it's a profession predominantly practiced by men. But I think that picks up the other point you made, which is that the leadership positions are all occupied by men or predominantly. How do you think that affects the way that issues relating to gender equality, women's empowerment are being reported and presented in the media outlets of the region?
It has a major impact. In my view and in my experience, it doesn't necessarily mean that more women in the media literally translate to more coverage on gender issues. It, in the organizations I've worked in, it has never happened that way. But you need women in positions of authority who can influence policy. So it becomes a policy of a particular media organization that more attention is paid to gender. And not for the sake of paying attention to gender and ticking another box, but we're going through that now at PACMAS. How can we be more gender sensitive? It's not just having a manual to say, okay, this is the gender appropriate language. It's more than that. How can we encourage women to get into business? How can we encourage women to be more involved in trade? It's more than just getting women into parliament. I mean, you know, standing for elections. But how can we gender sensitize, I suppose, the current crop of politicians so that they could then drive the gender agenda instead of it being left to a group of women or women's organizations. And I think that's where we haven't got it right. I mean, in terms of the region, not enough of our leaders are genuinely committed and proactive about being inclusive. For them, it's about, 50% of all our training, women will benefit. That's very superficial. But what percentage of your policies are influenced by women, or the girl child, or young people? What about the gay people? Because for me, gender is not just about women. It's also about those whose sexual orientation is not what some leaders think it should be. It's their right. Are we providing for them in the media? Are we using the media to sensitize and educate our leaders or the churches or the communities that, hey, we need to respect the fact that a person decides that he wants to be gay or she wants to be gay, or that they are disabled, or things like that. There's not enough, in my view, not enough. We're not doing enough of that. We need to. It needs to be more than getting X number of women or X percentage of women as employees in an organization. They need to be in a position of authority. They need to be in a position to be able to change policy, to influence policy. But it's a hard one. It's something we're not struggling with, but it's something that we desperately try to include in all our development projects that we support and we fund. I think related to that too as well, and I don't say this lightly, a lot of these organizations don't see eye to eye. Organizations that work with gender. Some of them seem to be at each other's throats all the time. And it doesn't augur well for the work that they do. We know there's a lot of money around in the area of gender. I think more than anything else, gender is a pet subject for a lot of donors, development partners, and it is an important area. But how effective is it? How effective is that? What proof of the impact in all these projects are having in terms of gender? Is there a reduction in gender violence? Is there a reduction in rape? I mean, a couple of years ago in Vanuatu, when the Chief Justice opened the session of the courts, he mentioned that 68% of crimes, of cases before the courts, were of a sexual nature. And that's sick. Yeah? Other projects that we're working on, or the activities we're working on, I mean, are we addressing those issues? Are the numbers still very high? What role or what impact have we had as media in changing the perception of men, particularly in Melanesia, where women are seen as a commodity? They're an object. There's the issue of ownership of women. What impact have we had in changing that perception? There's so much. One final thing for me on this issue, Tess, is that a lot of us are not gender sensitized enough. And those of us who work in the media industry, we need to do a lot more in terms of educating ourselves about, I'm not talking about all the different protocols and agreements in regards to women, but just some very simple issues in regards to the gender, which then can influence the way we think as men, and influence our actions. But not just the men. I think the women need to be gender sensitized as well. The recent survey that our sister project did here in Vanuatu showed that over 80% of the women surveyed felt it was okay to get beaten up, you know? They deserved to get beaten up. They did something wrong. I mean, saying that's not right, you know? Which shows us that maybe the things we're doing as the media are not working. Maybe it's time for us to relook at our strategies, eh? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Francis, thank you so much. It's been fascinating hearing you talk about subjects that I know are very close to your heart. So thank you very much for making the time.
You're welcome, Jess.